It's time for the Drive's Top 4 at 4.
Hour number 2 of the Drive, Fan Run Radio. Russell, Bear, Marcus, Tucker, Rick, all hanging out with you in the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. Marcus Young's got the top 4-4. Marcus, what do you got?
Thank you, Russell.
You're welcome.
At number 1, Tennessee senior forward Olivier Kamwa has announced his official transfer destination as he picks Michigan. Apparently, it was reported on Monday that he was down to West Virginia and Baylor, but Michigan became an option, and he took it. He went through the NBA draft process, pre-draft process, withdrew his name from the draft on May 31st, and has decided he will be heading up to Ann Arbor.
I feel like all things being equal, NIL-wise and everything, I would probably go to Michigan over Baylor and West Virginia.
Yeah.
Better league, better school, better school, better place to live.
But it's so north.
Prestige.
I'm going to take back. I couldn't live.
It's got the best prestige.
Yeah, I guess it depends if you're a cold weather guy or a hot weather guy.
He's a Finn.
Yeah, what's the typical weather in Finland? Granted, I don't think he's lived there for a minute.
It's a little bit further north.
Seems chilly.
Than Michigan.
Olivier Kamwa did not play in that Tennessee-Michigan NCAA tournament game.
That's right.
He was hurt during it. So okay. He wasn't even on the court for that 11-3
That's
nightmare
so
for Tennessee
That's,
fans.
Yeah.
But, yeah,
it's kind of strange.
Even though they're connected, and even though that game is the first memory for a lot of Tennessee fans, just the most recent, Olivier Kamwa was not playing.
Well, good luck to him, man. I hope it works out for him up there. I have no ill will towards Olivier. And he's certainly a talented player. He's just kind of...
If it wasn't for him, we don't have one of our best wins ever.
He's just kind of up and down, and I hope that he can put it all together and have a nice, consistent season.
At number 2, Lionel Messi has made a stunning decision as he will be heading to Major League Soccer.
Who?
Messi coming to America.
He will be, following his departure from Paris Saint-Germain, he will be joining Miami CF. Miami. From my understanding, it's a very similar situation with that David Beckham had, where he will have an opportunity for partial ownership for a discounted price.
I wonder if he's going to tear that league up. It'll be an interesting test to see. Like, he comes, because he's on the downside of his career, but I don't think he's totally washed. And usually guys like that, they come over when they're washed, and then it's like they found the fountain of youth, because MLS is so much worse than the leagues over there that they dominate. I would imagine if he's healthy and focused at all, he will be pretty good.
What is the equivalent of this for us non-soccer Americans over here? Like, is this Steph Curry going to European basketball? Is it bigger?
I'll try to help you out. It'd be like if I would say maybe someone from the Dallas Cowboys, you know, Tony Romo decided to go play in the CFL. Like,
you're comparing Messi to Romo.
Romo?
No, I'm trying to help him out for understanding, you know, being a Dallas fan.
He's one of the two best players of his generation.
Do you really not?
So is Romo.
You don't
know. No, he was not.
That's what they say.
Do you really not know who Messi is?
I just don't
care. Did he win a playoff game? It's a yes or no question.
I can't remember.
I was trying to speak to his language as a Dallas fan. I thought, you know, Romo was the first name I came up with, and I'm so sorry. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I'm kind of excited to see. He's making his way through Nashville, things like that. I mean, that'd be really cool. I mean, those tickets are going to be insane whenever he comes to any town.
By the way, Jeff on Twitter says, Kamwa just didn't want to play for woke Bob Huggins.
Bob Huggins, who still has
now,
a job.
Now that he's going to be reformed, the kinder, gentler Bob Huggins. Yeah. He wanted to play for the old crusty.
Sure.
He likes the fire that Juwan Howard has.
Bob Huggins, yes.
At number three, some unfortunate news we've talked about a little bit today. The Iron Sheik, Hall of Fame pro wrestler, has passed away at the age of 81. The standout Greco-Roman wrestler from Iran who gained global fame in professional wrestling with his 1980s rivalries against the likes of Hulk Hogan, passed away at the age of 81, his official Twitter account shared.
You know what's wild is I think he's, because of social media and his crazy Twitter persona, yeah. That I guess that was his real deal, him.
I don't think it was a persona. It's kind of.
But you know what I mean? Like
he was a nut.
Like if he had not, if he had never been on Twitter, I don't think this would have been as big.
I think he has kept his name alive, yeah. And in the know, and, because of his Twitter.
He was beloved because, I mean, he would just say some of the worst, you know.
Always an F-bomb in every Sheik tweet.
GFY.
The first time I saw a Sheik tweet, I was like, oh my God, I was just so blown away by it. And then it quickly became, like, I followed him, and I would see it, and it would just be like, yeah, whatever. Sheik dropping an F-bomb on the president or something.
Man, there was nobody he hated more than Hulk Hogan. I mean, it
yeah, but look up in the past few years, I think everybody figured out that it wasn't kayfabe.
Yeah.
This was, he was shooting.
Well, people figured out that Hulk Hogan wasn't a good person out of kayfabe, and Sheik was the one who ran with the flag.
Yeah. Yeah, and Sheik was actually a really good dude.
Yeah.
So.
And finally, at number four, NBA continues this evening at 8:30 p.m. as we head into Game 3 between the Nuggets and the Heat. The series is tied 1-1, first game in Miami. Denver still has a 3.5-point favorite for this game.
We'll see. So, did you guys see where Jimmy's getting swept up in one of those big crypto cases?
Jimmy Butler?
Yeah. I don't know if he was.
Nah, like, I did not see that myself.
I saw where the feds are suing the big, like, I guess, exchange or wherever this stuff is traded on.
Yeah, but they're also going after the celebrities that made all this coin talking people in. There's a bunch of celebrities that are been involved with it. Obviously, Jimmy Butler.
I don't know how I feel about that.
I'm excited for the basketball game, though.
If you're dumb enough to invest just because Jimmy Butler said it was a good idea, then it's the old adage about a fool and their money.
Well, but here's the like on this whole topic. The other issue is that you have a lot of internet celebrities who've been doing stuff like that too. And the unfortunate news is that a lot of them have followers who are literal children who could just easily start spending their parents' money like wild if they get their credit card, debit card, whatever. A lot of it is idiots who are adults who just don't think, but then there's also just
maybe there need to be laws against children being online, man. It's not safe anymore. I don't know if it's ever safe, but it's particularly unsafe now. It's all kinds of predatory behavior on there. All right, thank you, Marcus. That is the top four at four. The Nuggets, a 3-point favorite tonight in Miami, and would appear to be a pivotal game this evening in the playoffs. 865-546-8200, your number to get on board this afternoon. 546-8200 if you want to chime in as we break things down today. Coming up, Rick's coworker, your partner in crime.
Yeah.
Ryan Shumpert, Rocky Top Insider, going to be on with us here, and we'll get in-depth on Tennessee baseball as the Volunteers get set to go to Hattiesburg, where highs are going to be in the mid-90s Saturday and Sunday.
Let's see. Humidity probably hovering around 92 as well.
A thick coastal heat.
I think it's almost worse when it's like that because I looked at like 50, 75 miles inland. You aren't getting the breeze anymore coming off the water that far. You're just getting the heat.
Somebody, I was talking with somebody who works around the team yesterday, and they were telling me the part, what sucked for them on Saturday was they were the road team playing Clemson.
Okay.
And they were in
the visitor dugout.
They were in the visitor's dugout. And the sun, the way it was setting, like Clemson was in the shade, and that sun was just in their dugout, like right in their faces. So even when the players come off the field, they're sitting, they're still just getting roasted. They had no shade.
And they're in the dark modes.
Wow. That's right.
Sitting there wearing black jerseys.
Wow.
And I think we were the home I think once Clemson was eliminated Sunday, I think we were in their dugout.
They jumped back.
And it was the same time. So we
were I wish I would have looked for that. I almost want to go back and watch videos and pictures just to kind of see how much it was playing a maybe not playing a factor, but just how much it was there.
I don't think you know, we talked about the black unis and everything. I don't think that's a huge factor. I do think if you don't have shade in the dugout.
Oh, sure.
I think that could be able to sit. A factor. But you know, these are young guys. They're young guys in the prime of their career, and they have access to a world-class nutrition and strength staff that will make sure that they are properly hydrated.
Speaking of that, go ahead.
I was going to say, but I mean, it goes back to we knew before that game ended that whoever lost that game was in big trouble and was probably going to get knocked out because it gets to a point, like Clemson ran out of gas the next day against Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. And gas and pitching they ran out of.
Well, because we ran through them all.
I think this was announced last night, so I don't know if you would have gotten around to talk to it, but did you guys see the numbers that ESPN put out around that Tennessee-Clemson game? It was astronomical. The most the most watched regionals on ESPN platforms in over a decade, up 37% over 2022. That was as a whole. And then Saturday's Tennessee-Clemson matchup was the most viewed game of the regional round, averaged about 736,000 viewers, second most watched regionals game on the ESPN platforms on record. So a lot of eyes tuning in for the Orange Bowl.
I mean, they did a million last year for, was it the Notre Dame? One of the Notre Dame games?
Really? I can't remember that, but it would make sense just considering how much of a villain Tennessee was and how people like to tune in to see the villain fall. So that would make sense if you had told me that's the number.
Well, they've completely changed that this year.
What?
That's one thing, Tennessee. They don't act the same way they used to.
They don't, but I think they get the same treatment. I think people hated last year's team so much that it carries over to this team, even though you're right. I think this team plays with a much more respectful disposition, but I think the rest of the country still hates this program.
Yeah, that probably won't change as long as the face of our program is Tony.
Yeah. I think it's just Tennessee being Tennessee, right? People have very big and opinionated thoughts on Tennessee as a whole, so baseball is just going to add to the bunch.
Go hard in the paint.
Apparently, it got chippy between Tennessee and Clemson on the field.
Well, yeah, that's what we've talked about it. I think it was probably chippy. I'd love to know what Denton had been saying. I can't pronounce the kid's name right. The kid that got thrown out, Canera.
Yeah. I don't think Denton said anything to him
at that particular time, but apparently they've been going back and forth.
Oh, it was leading up. Well, there was the incident when they warned both sides after I think it was Simo had run. He was running back to the dugout after he got out and said something to Grice, the pitcher. And it didn't look bad. Like, you're watching TV, like I didn't even notice anything. And then all of a sudden they're stopping the game and they're warning both Tony and the Clemson coach, and then they show the replay, and like you could tell they were saying something, but it didn't look.
So that's a problem. You have no idea because what you're saying is it didn't look, but we don't actually know what those two were saying to each other.
Well, usually when in football or basketball, when something's said and somebody takes offense, you can tell because the guys like they stop what they're doing and get each other's face and. Yeah. Like in baseball, you very rarely see that.
Nor are you necessarily lining up from each other, being close to each other for that specific play. I mean, you're talking unless a guy's sitting on third or obviously Ensley being in the outfield. I mean, they're not just going to spend time, you know, next to the other guy, being able to trash talk for so long. So it was
the only major incident I remember this year was I think it was in the Florida series when Christian Moore was coming up to bat. And he just stopped, and the catcher said something to him, and all of a sudden, Simo and the Florida catcher are in each other's grill and had to be separated.
Which series was it where the umpire, was it Simo that he shoved? It was when somebody kind of took a cheap shot on Dolander at a play at first.
Oh, it was the Vanderbilt series.
Simo was in that one too. Yeah.
So here's reading from Ryan.
He was ejected, right?
Yeah. And had to miss the next game.
Yeah.
This is what Ryan wrote on that day, so which was April 22nd. With one on and one out, Christian Moore and first baseman Blake Burke drifted into right field in a high fly ball to shallow right field. Burke made the play and fired the ball into Chase Dolander, who was covering first. Vanderbilt base runner Tony Leneve ran into Dolander while getting back to the base. Moore came charging back in and got in Leneve's face, and as jawing ensued.
Looking back on it.
The Bundy boys.
You know, having won the game, swept the series, and all that stuff at the time. And I didn't think it was that big a deal at the time, but like it's just a baseball thing, man. Yeah. That stuff happens, and
yeah,
Chris Moore probably overreacted. Probably shouldn't have been thrown out of the game for it, but
probably not. But you know they're gonna do what they have to do to keep control of the situation. You don't want a big brawl in college baseball.
Speak for yourself.
I mean, I would, but would you really? Everybody be probably multiple, you know, five game suspensions.
At that point, we probably couldn't have afforded it. Last year's team, if you did it in the regular season, would have added to the lore, I feel like.
Who would you have wanted? Which one of our guys?
I feel like Beck was probably the biggest dude out there. I don't know. Old Ben Joyce.
He's huge.
He's a mountain of a man now. 6'5", 2", whatever.
I probably would have, you know, you roll in Ben Joyce and Jordan Beck would have been a hell of a tag team, man.
Yeah, and then maybe after the brawl ensues, you put Ben Joyce on the mound, right? So now they're like, well, now we got this guy throwing 101 mile per hour.
I would have thought you would have said Gilby.
From a pure attitude standpoint, yeah, that's probably where
he's most likely to bite somebody in a fight. I feel like it'd be Gilbert off that team.
Stay with us. The drive continues. Ryan Shumpert of Rocky Top Insider up next when we continue right here on Fan Run Radio. Fan Run Radio, the drive continues. We got a RTI twofer.
It's a takeover.
This afternoon. I know, man. Can Bear and I go home?
Sure. Take things from here.
Ryan Shumpert of RockyTopInsider.com joining us with Rick Butler of RockyTopInsider.com. Good afternoon, Ryan. How are you, sir?
I was doing pretty good until I heard Rick's voice on the other side.
Wow. Shots fired.
I mean, come on.
I have spent good portions of this show hyping you up. Don't make me backtrack. I will. I'll do it for the 5 o'clock hour, too.
Okay, I guess I'll remove my hate if you complain it, friendly.
It's good to hear your voice, my friend.
Yours as well.
Hate it when you two fight like this. Ryan Shumpert, RTI, with us this afternoon. A lot of baseball talk going on right now. Hey, Ryan, just your thoughts on the college baseball postseason process. That's what we've been talking a lot about here this afternoon. And, I mean, do you think this is a good way to operate the sport? Are there some changes you think college baseball should make to make it a little bit fair and more transparent? Or is this just Tennessee fans whining because they didn't get what they wanted?
It's funny you bring it up, and there probably is at least a little bit of an element of the last thing you said of Tennessee fans whining because it didn't go their way. But no one had even asked me about this week until you just did, and I kind of thought that, man, it feels like the NCAA almost mails it in a little bit past football and really men's basketball. If you want to look at some of the issues the women's tournaments had over the years, but you're right. I think it would probably be very easy to put some sort of set rule in place about, all right, whoever beats the higher seed in the regional, they're to host, or just something uniform where it's not behind kind of a cloud of uncertainty. And you know, in this case, I think where politics and money largely came into play for why Tennessee's going to Hattiesburg this instead of hosting. And the rule, I'll really say, that it has to be changed. Not even I want to be changed, has to be changed. And it's not specific to the postseason, but it's more amplified. And that's the rule where if a player gets ejected, they have to be suspended the next game. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. I know there was, I think, a player from Central Connecticut State who pimped a home run in the eighth inning of their conference championship game. It was like a 3-run homer to put him up by 5, kind of put that game away. He gets ejected, can't play game one against South Carolina in a regional. And obviously Cam Canarello, probably butchering that name, the Clemson outfielder, gets ejected for what was essentially just pure nonsense last week against Tennessee. And it's bad enough that he's ejected from that game, but suspended again the next game. And then obviously Tennessee had the example last year where Drew Gilbert was ejected game one against Notre Dame. I would say he probably earned that ejection, but it didn't feel like something that was where he should have been suspended for another game. So I think there's a handful of things the NCAA could do better, really more about clarity with its postseason format, but that's the one rule with the ejections that is just really, really dumb, in my opinion, and needs to be changed sooner rather than later.
That's the worst part about the ejections is when, because when it's happening, you're just like, oh my God, what's going on? Oh, he got tossed. That sucks for him. But it always takes, like, there's a delay when you realize, oh, this means he's out for the next game too. And it's like a double whammy.
It really is. And it's, these games are just so, so important at this point in the season. And look, I don't like the rule even in the regular season. But it's one thing for Christian Moore to get ejected against Vanderbilt and not be able to play the next day. It's 55-game season. It's a long season. When it gets magnified in these postseason environments, it's pretty ridiculous to be suspended. And I think a lot of it, and heck, you could probably call this a Tennessee rule. I think there's been, especially in Tennessee games, but across the sport as a whole, an emphasis by the umpires that we don't want to let this get out of hand. We don't want to let things amplify. And I think the umpires get a little bit of a quick trigger on ejecting players. And you could argue, you know, I personally don't like it. I'm personally a let them play. You could argue there's some good in that, but any good that is in that gets far outweighed by what you just said when it's 5 minutes after the ejection happens and you realize, oh, goodness, this person can't play again in a do-or-die game tomorrow. And at that point, it kind of becomes pretty ridiculous.
Is the phrase double whammy lost on your generation, Rick and Ryan? I feel like that. What was that game show, Bear? Do you know what the whammy is?
14?
No whammies.
I know
what
a double whammy is.
Okay. That crossed my mind when I said
no whammies.
No whammies. What game show was that?
I cannot remember the name of it.
It was like an old 80s game show.
It would raise your anxiety levels.
It was the little red guy, and he would come out, and he's all mad. Do you know what I'm...
I vaguely know what you're talking about, but it's just the phrase, you know, a double whammy, a big whammy. Yeah.
It was pressure luck.
Pressure luck, yeah.
Pressure luck, okay.
Yeah, because you could let it ride, and the whammy was always waiting out there.
Yeah, it's like the bankrupt bar on Wheel of Fortune. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rick.
Ryan, you've been to every away game that Tennessee baseball has been to this year. You have seen them up close and personal away from Lindsey Nelson Stadium, but in the last really – discluding the SEC tournament, you saw them go and take 2 out of 3 against South Carolina. You saw them take 3 in a row in Clemson. Just kind of from your perspective, where is Tennessee right now with playing on the road? Do you think that's been a fair storyline? Do you think that's been a little overblown storyline? Just kind of with the a little bit more recent success here in the last couple of weeks, just where do you think this team is playing away from Lindsey Nelson Stadium in order to get the job done?
Well, again, I appreciate you hyping me up. I wasn't at LSU and I wasn't in Arizona, so I missed 2 road series. But I've been at, I guess now the 4 trips, the 5 trips on the road they've had since. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of both. It's a fair storyline because when you're the last weekend of the season and you're 2-10 on the way from home, like, that's something that's going to be talked about. Like, that can't be ignored. Now, and Ben McKee gave a really good answer about this on the radio earlier this week in Nashville. Some of it was overblown. You know, they played in the LSU series. You know, they made some simple mistakes, but I don't think they played awful. The Missouri series, they certainly played awful. The Arkansas series, I think, was kind of that way, too, where while those first 2 games weren't blowouts, they largely weren't competitive and they did a lot of things wrong. But you look at some of them, like LSU, I thought they played pretty well. Georgia, I thought they certainly didn't play fantastic, but I think I didn't think they just didn't show up. I think a lot of breaks went against them in those final 2 games of the series, especially on the Sunday game. And now by this point, I think any sort of conversation about that is in the rearview mirror. And you win the series at South Carolina, and obviously quick trip down to the SEC tournament. That's a very, I think I said it on here the week following, what happened in the SEC tournament is not a good indicator for what's going to happen in the NCAA tournament. So that didn't bother me as much. And then obviously they played really well last week. I think they kind of answered the vast majority of those questions. And I think in some ways, going on the road could be good for this team because I think they're going to have an edge about them and a fire about them. I actually sat down with Camden Sewell for a story I'm writing on him later this week, a little plug there. But that was something, you know, I could tell it wasn't lost on those guys. You know, they felt a little disrespected by the fact that they were not selected as a super regional host. And obviously everybody is going to be really dialed in, and you don't need any extra motivation at this time of the year. But I do think that'll give Tennessee a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. And if there's anything about Tennessee baseball under Tony Vitello, they're at their best when there's a chip on their shoulder.
I don't think they had that last year in the super regional. I think there was this weight of expectation on them. Notre Dame was expected to come in here and lay down. And when they didn't, and when Gilbert got thrown out of the second game and he wasn't there for the third game, I feel like all of a sudden the pressure shifted, and the pressure was on Tennessee to win, and Notre Dame was able to play looser. And like you felt that vibe inside the stadium, and sure. I feel like that transferred to the coaches and the players, which shouldn't be a problem this week.
I can't remember, so one of you correct me here, but was the Evan Russell situation, was that in the regionals or the supers?
That was the regional.
Okay, so that was a little before. I didn't know if that factored into that one. But Ryan, looking ahead actually at the super regional, though, instead of just what's around it, Tennessee fans might not be too familiar with Southern Miss. Just kind of what can you tell us about that baseball team and what we're going to be watching this weekend?
Yeah, it's a really solid program and one that is in the Super Regionals for the second straight year. And actually been in different conferences. They were in the Conference USA last year. Now they're in the Sun Belt this season. And they finished second in a strong Sun Belt in the regular season. They went on to win the Sun Belt tournament. So it's a good team. They're pretty well-rounded, better pitching numbers when you kind of look across the country than they have hitting numbers. But they're good at both areas. Tanner Hall is the ace for them, by far their best pitcher on the mound. He's got a 12-3 record, 2.08 ERA. What's going to be really fascinating about him, he threw somewhere around 125 pitches on Friday in the regional opener for Southern Miss and then turned around on Monday and threw about 35 again. So what does his arm look like? Obviously, this is a Saturday through Monday super regional, so it's one extra day of rest. But is he ready to go and ready to give Southern Miss another 100 pitches on Saturday, or is it going to be later in the weekend when he's able to go? So to me, that's a big storyline. Pete Taylor Field's a little bit of a bigger ballpark, too, and the numbers kind of bear that out for Southern Miss. A handful of home run hitters. Dustin Dickerson's at 10 on the year. I think he hit 6 of them, though, last week at Auburn, just on an unbelievable tear. And then Slade Wilkes has 20 home runs. So there's a handful of home run hitters, but more so, it's a team that hits a lot of doubles, a lot of extra base hits. I think they rank around 35th nationally in extra base hits, and I think that's largely a byproduct of the stadium they play in.
Talking with Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com this afternoon. And Ryan, talking about Southern Miss and some of these guys who've heated up at the right time, do you feel confident in saying that Tennessee's pitching, particularly the starters, will be like nothing else they've seen Southern Miss batting to this point?
I'm confident to say that. And they've played 3 midweek games against SEC teams, but again, that's a midweek game. You're not getting the full force of the pitching. They faced Auburn game 2 and beat them. So, you know, that was, I'm sure Auburn was throwing their probably second best arm without having looked at it and done the research. So that was a good example of it. But when you're talking about a 3-game series, they haven't seen anything like what Tennessee's going to be able to throw at them. And not just, I mean, you mentioned the starters, and obviously that's true, but that's the thing that I've said about Tennessee for a long time this season. It's not just the starters. It's the fact that you have the 3 starters, then you have Chase Burns, and you have Seth Halverson, who also just have overpowering stuff, high 90s fastballs, and then obviously Camden Sewell doesn't quite have that at this point in his career, but is a very effective pitcher. So Tennessee goes 6 deep with talented arms they can throw at you, and really more than that, probably talented, proven arms. A.J. Russell, extremely talented. Hollis Fanning, extremely talented. The only weekend series Southern Miss, or really 2 weekend series Southern Miss has played this season against bigger opponents. Illinois, they dropped 2 out of 3, and in Dallas Baptist, they swept. Dallas Baptist did make a regional and got, I think, even a regional final last week in Stillwater and got eliminated by Oral Roberts. So they've seen some Power 5 pitching. It's not like it's going to be a complete rarity, but when you talk about a 3-game series and just the depth of numbers that Tennessee can throw at you, it's certainly going to be something that, to that extent, the Golden Eagles haven't seen this season.
Ryan, not including pitchers, is Christian Moore the most important X factor on this Tennessee baseball team, just from what we've seen throughout the course of the season, but then mainly from what we saw last weekend?
I think I would say probably so, in large part because he's streaky, but when he's on, man, it's something special. And you saw that earlier in the year, back-to-back series, Mississippi State and Georgia, he was just really, really good. And then last weekend, I mean, the guy hit as many home runs as outs he recorded over a three-game weekend. So he was dominant, and when he's on, he can turn it to another notch. I would say he and Blake Burke are probably the most purely talented hitters on this Tennessee lineup, but certainly Moore at his best has been better against top competition than Burke has. And then the other guys, you know, Jared Dickey, he's been a little bit shaky since that shoulder injury he suffered late in the regular season. He got hit in the hand with the ball last week. That I think was
that looked nasty. I thought maybe his hand was going to be broken there, just the way that the ball ricocheted off of it.
I'd forgotten about that until just now.
Well, they wear that
little bit of padding.
Well, it's a padding, and I think it's got like that hard shell thing that kind of protects the back of their hand.
He took that glove off, and Ryan, I don't know if you could see it, obviously being up in the box, but the television broadcast, I mean, it had a nasty red dot immediately, and even the umpires had to, I think they even looked back, and he was like, no, it hit me, you can see it, but I thought that was going to be worse.
Yeah, no, you're right. They did end up reviewing it, and I didn't get that close look at it. But, yeah, I mean, there's nothing fun about that. And then the last guy I would kind of name in that tier two was Griffin Barrett, who obviously with the power he has, when he has strong weekends, it changes Tennessee's lineup. And he hasn't been as streaky as a Christian Moore, as a Zane Denton, but he certainly had his up and downs this season as well.
It's been really cool to see him come alive because the first half or so of the season, it was like, oh man, we kind of swung and missed here. Like this is not what we expected. And now he comes up and you're expecting him to hit the ball hard every time.
You really are. And, you know, I will compliment myself. I think I did a good job of, you know, not hitting the panic button on too many things for Tennessee baseball this season. But the one where I really swung and missed was on Griffin Barrett. I mean, those first, I don't know, 3-4 weeks of SEC play, really 4 weeks, and even by Arkansas, he wasn't fantastic. It was really that Mississippi State series when he hit, Vanderbilt series when he hit the walk-off to turn around the season, but he just looked overwhelmed by the SEC fastball, and I kind of, to your point, I was like, man, this feels like one Tennessee just missed on in the portal, and the transition from the American Athletic Conference to the SEC has just been a little too much for this guy, but that hasn't proved to be the case. He's figured some things out. He's caught up. He's the most mature guy, I think, on the team, and his mindset is just really, really good, really well-spoken, really smart. And you've seen I certainly was frustrated with how things were going, but never got too down on himself, kept his confidence, and he's now in the cleanup spot and has really proved to be one of Tennessee's best hitters down the stretch of the season.
Well, that's such a great point. The other thing, you mentioned the mentality there, and I was reading some quotes from Vitello coming out where he said, you know, he was going on and on about his good play, but also the leadership that he's brought. He's kind of a team leader, and it took him a while to, you know, fill into that void, obviously being a new guy. But that was something I think that really hurt the beginning of the season, is nobody is going to step into Drew Gilbert's shoes. You lose everybody else in that, you know, the fielding lineup out there, and I think that really hurt them, not having those team leaders. And, you know, Merritt is a different kind of guy. He's unique. He's not Drew Gilbert. He's not Jordan Beck. But he slid into that role. And, that really comes through just watching the games on TV to me, Ryan, is like, you know, he and I think Christian Moore are guys that this team is kind of rallying around right now.
100%. And you go back and look at it, and obviously a ton of new faces. We know that. But look at the returners on this team and the veterans. Camden Sewell was banged up all fall, didn't hardly pitch. Hard to step into a firm leadership position when that's the case. I think Blake Burke, Blake Burke and Chris Moore, both sophomores, so even then they're kind of the veterans on the team because they had a role last season. But they're young guys, and they're still learning how to lead and learning how to step up into that. And then the other, along with Camden Sewell, the other kind of senior, super senior on the team, is Christian Scott, who was a guy that has been a big part of this program but hadn't had a ton of proven success this season. So a lot of the guys that were returning were trying to figure things out for themselves and fill out what their role was going to be and earn their role. And I think that can make it kind of hard to be a natural leader in those circumstances. But they figured it out as the year's gone on. You've had those transfers. I think it's become more and more comfortable. And certainly I think Griffin Merritt is the most obvious candidate of a guy that's come in, filled his way out in the fall, filled his way out early in the season, but now is extremely comfortable around those guys. You would never note he's a transfer and is really one of the leaders and really one of the heartbeats of the team.
Ryan Shumpert, RockyTopInsider.com. Follow him on the Twitter machine at RSCHUMP00. Ryan, we appreciate it. Your way out the door. Just anything else you care to add about, you know, Tennessee baseball, the Super Regionals, the road to Omaha, or anything else you got going on?
I guess two things I'll say, and one of these things is something Camden Sewell made note to me today. He said, I don't know if you noticed, but we were all fired up when we won the regional last weekend, but it was a handshake line. There was no dogpiling. You look around the country, there's a lot of dogpiling. And
wow.
I think there's certainly especially from those veterans in that room, last weekend was great. They were super excited to beat Clemson and win a regional again. But there's a lot of unfinished business.
Unfinished business last year.
Hey, didn't Tony say after the first game or after the Clemson game that maybe some of the guys were still up and celebrating and whatnot, and Christian Moore was one of the ones who was already focused on that third and final game? Am I making that up?
No, he said you nailed it. That's exactly what he said. He said he'd already turned his attention and was completely locked into finishing the job off. I guess at that point he didn't know whether it would be Charlotte or Clemson. And then the last thing I have, maybe my favorite stat from last weekend, and it's a good lead-in by you, Rick. Christian Moore drove in 9 runs. Tennessee gave up 9 runs as a pitching staff all last weekend. So
wow.
That was the best baseball Tennessee's played all year. All the issues that have plagued them, defense, base running, some Tony Vitello pitching decisions. And goodness knows I thought Tony Vitello was making some mistakes with the pitching decisions on Saturday. Even his own dad did. But they all worked out. Tennessee exercised the demons that they've struggled with this year. And now the goal for them is to do what they did last weekend, repeat it for another weekend, and they do that, they'll go back to the College World Series for the sixth time in program history.
All right, Ryan, we appreciate it. As always, my friend, safe travels down there to Hattiesburg, and hopefully you've got one more road trip to Omaha after that.
Yeah, two long ones left. I guess Arkansas has trained me a little bit, but two big ones, and certainly I hope I get to make both. They'll be a lot of fun, and man, postseason baseball, high intensity, high fun for sure.
They'll put you guys on the RTI private jet if it goes to Omaha,
that's right?
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah, charter plane for sure. Yeah.
All right, Ryan. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me on.
See you, man.
Ryan Shumpert of RockyTopInsider.com.
Real quick, I hadn't heard anything about that. Did he just say that even his dad had questions about some of his pitching?
He did say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a good question. Tony's dad?
Yeah.
Yeah, he said, I would have done a lot of things differently.
Yeah.
This is what Tony said he said.
I think you just got a lot of personality in that family.
Poor Tony. Everybody questioning his decisions.
Including Bear the other
week.
It
wasn't me. That was Russell.
Yeah, but he knows it's you now.
No.
He thinks it's
he
you.
He thinks it's me.
Yeah. That was everybody. I just admit it.
Okay.
Bear won't admit that he was criticizing Tony.
I don't want him to think I'm disloyal.
This is really, really something coming from you guys. After I questioned him just for a moment once, and you guys let me have it, you wouldn't let it go, and all of a sudden, hey, I'm willing to admit it.
Marcus, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Me either.
What were you questioning Vitello about?
To be honest with you, I don't remember. I think I was saying,
you bring it up. You're what, that fragile.
You don't know.
That,
you don't know.
I think you have no idea. I think I mentioned something. I said that he kind of got out coached in one of his series.
Oh, whoa!
In one of series,
you want to take that back?
Walk it back. I remember now.
Out-coached.
Now you remember.
There's a huge difference between us questioning it at what point in the game.
Questioning his coaching?
No, it's not questioning some of his pitching strategy decisions.
His between decision that is coaching.
That the baseball king got out-coached by any of these chumps and bums in the SEC. Take it back, Marcus.
You like how I lured you into that conversation and just immediately turned on you as soon as you got into the middle of the ring?
Yeah.
That was an Iron Sheik move
right
there.
Yeah, it was. He laid the flag down afterwards.
Stay with us. The Drive continues. More Fan Run Radio coming up. Fan Run Radio, The Drive continues. Rick Butler hanging out in studio this afternoon. Wanted to save this one for when we had Rick in here. KnoxNews.com on Monday.
Don't do it.
What?
I think I know where you're going to go with this. I'd rather if you didn't.
Lay back and let him finish.
Listed the 12 restaurants and fast food joints that Knoxville wants most.
I stand corrected. My apologies.
What did you
I thought you were
going to
talk about the Copper Cellar shutting down on Cumberland. Because that is a travesty. That's a tragic story,
I meant
man.
To go one last time.
I did too. I went like about a month ago and got and picked up.
You picked up?
Yeah.
Well, that's not.
That's not the same.
Going.
Well, sure it is.
No, you didn't sit down and have bread and soak up the ambiance.
I waited on them to finish my stuff and bring it to me at the bar.
Whoa, that's not.
That's not.
You didn't even go downstairs.
Doesn't matter.
It does.
It does. You didn't go.
Yeah, I did.
You just, what you had was Uber Eats, and you were just too cheap to pay the driver, so you went and got it yourself. That's all you had. Didn't have the full experience.
In 2012 or 2013, I took a trip up here to Knoxville with my dad, just coming to watch a basketball or a football game or something, and we had seen Konzo Martin, and I got his autograph on a welcome to college thing.
You're a damn senior in high school, and you asked somebody for an autograph?
I think I did. I didn't know if it's going to be worth something later on. It wasn't.
Newsflash.
Don't act like you wouldn't do the same thing if you met someone. Like
I don't ask for autographs.
Never.
No, not since I was like maybe 10 years old.
There are certain people that if I met, I would 100% ask.
Yeah, it was good. It's good stuff. I didn't mean to derail you.
I know me. I'm going to end up putting it in a drawer somewhere. I never look at it.
Not only did you derail me, we took like an entirely bear derailed into the Copper Cellar conference. No, I guess you did.
Yeah, that was me.
Then we went into whether or not you actually went there. So it ended up in, is it lame to get autographs as an adult?
Yes.
I mean, we took a series of detours there. All right, the 12 locations, according to KnoxNews.com, that Knoxvillians want most. Number one. Boston Market. Boston Market is pretty good, man. We used to have one out west.
Is that number one on that list?
Well, they're not ranked. It's just, I don't know if this alphabetical order was.
Yeah, I feel like it's the kind of thing where like I'd be craving it, get down there, want some like some pot roast or maybe meatloaf brown, you know, with the
nice
brown
rotisserie
gravy.
Rotisserie chicken.
Yeah.
You know, hearty mac and cheese.
Yeah.
But then you get it home and you eat it and you kind of feel kind of bloated.
You're like, this is still kind of fast food.
It's just very heavy food.
All right. The closest location is in Atlanta. Likelihood we get it 1 out of 5, according to Knox News. Boston Market has some financial problems. Probably not expanding. Number two, Giordano's.
You guys don't know what that is.
Yeah, it's Chicago style pizza.
Nah. Oh, I'll take it. That sounds great.
We've got Big Ed's. Big Ed's in Chicago style.
Well, I know, but it's
we've got one authentic
Rosati's.
Rosati's, and then we've got what's the other
Jets?
One?
I'm not a big fan of the Chicago style.
I prefer Detroit style.
Detroit style is almost American style. Like it's deep dishes, whatever. Like Chicago style, it's barely even pizza. It's just like
it's like a big tomato
sauce
pie.
Soup. I mean, it's like you got to try it, I guess, if you go up there. I don't know that one would be successful here. Number three, In-N-Out.
Yeah.
They are coming to Nashville. I mean, they announced that they're moving to Nashville, so there could be some locations more coming through. Across the state, the company's president told the Tennessean earlier this year that she fell in love with Nashville and Pigeon Forge. So you could see.
I guarantee. I know one person will be burning down I-40 to get down there and hark down like four In-N-Out burgers.
Yes.
Oh. Got Houston Crest written all over.
Oh.
Ah.
He'll be going directly to Nashville to eat In-N-Out.
In-N-Out is very good, very beloved.
Have you had it?
A skosh.
Overrated.
Overrated.
Way
a skosh. Overrated. Overrated. Had it twice. But yeah.
I had it twice. I had it once in Texas. I thought it was overrated.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? I'm going to give it another chance. And I actually had it once in Dallas, once in Fort Worth. And it was like, it's okay. It's good.
Yeah.
It's, but
I wonder
it's
if it's better at the California ones.
Oh, I think they're pretty standard.
Yeah.
I don't know. Cody raves about it.
A little overrated. I don't know where we're doing. Maybe four here.
Yeah, four.
Jack in the Box.
Is that the
That's
one with the weird mascot?
Yeah.
Like,
they've got one on the Mid-State. I've been to the one on, it's maybe Mount Joliet or somewhere around there, maybe a little bit.
So what's their style?
It's greasy burgers and stuff, but they also have tacos. It was okay.
Okay.
It was okay. Number five? Six?
Five.
Yeah.
Pals.
Ah.
It's gotten to the point with those people.
Okay.
Okay. They can keep it.
Again, I've taken a lot of slings and arrows of this one over the years. I've overrated. Much like In-N-Out, it's good. It's not great.
Yeah.
It's not fantastic. But people go crazy over it. I have heard that they are eventually coming to Knoxville. Number six.
Really?
Portillo's. Portillo's? Portillo's?
Ah, yeah, yeah.
What's that?
It's Chicago beef.
Yeah.
And hot dogs.
Oh, yes. Like hot beef sandwiches?
It's really good. I went to one in Chicago. We went there twice, actually.
Yeah, I've heard hot that
beef
place.
So it's like a real saucy beef.
Very famous.
Yeah.
It's got like peppers in it.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Real good.
Dude.
Likelihood we get it, according to Knox News, 1 out of 5 closest locations are in Indiana and Florida. Number seven, Schlotsky's Deli.
Coming back?
We used to have those here.
Yeah, and they had a Reuben. Their Reuben was incredible at Schlotsky's. I think I'd read an article where I thought the whole brand was going under. I know they still had are they based out of Texas? Because I know that they've still got one in Austin. I looked it up.
Closest locations are Franklin and Dalton, Georgia.
There is one in Franklin.
Okay.
I'll be in Franklin here in a couple
headquartered
weeks.
In Atlanta. Schlotsky's. And number eight, we'll get the rest of these coming up next hour. Number eight is my favorite. I concur with this 110%. It was a revelation when I went in Houston last year.
Oh.
No, here we go.
Do it. Do it.
Shake Shack.
Oh, I thought he was going with what's probably next.
I thought I did too.
Shake Shack.
Hey, Shake Shack
is
very
fantastic.
Good though. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
I will wholeheartedly agree with you.
So good.
Milkshake's good.
I feel like Mouya's just as good as Shake Shack.
You've never been to Shake Shack. How can you say it's just as good if you've never been to one?
Have you met me? I can say
yes. It's so frustrating. I've been to both. Shake Shack, much better.
All right.
I'll just say
it's a good list.
Couple things on the list I've never been, so I can't say about those, like the Chicago beef and Shake Shack.
Mm-hmm.
Rest of it, pretty overrated.
You can do without.
Yeah.
Okay. We got four more.
We got time for one more.
We'll let you know. You want to tease it? You want to?
No, give me one more, and then we'll have the final three.
Skyline Chili.
That's an Ohio place, right?
That's
in
Cincinnati.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely.
Specifically Cincinnati. Yeah.
It's one of those things, either you love it.
I never had it.
Or you hate it.
Ah.
I never had it.
And I hate it.
I have.
Is Skyline different or is it the company name?
Well, they put it's chili on top of spaghetti.
Spaghetti noodles and the chili itself.
It's like a big old plate of spaghetti and then
has
just cheese all over it.
Yeah, finely shredded cheddar cheese. The chili itself, one of the main flavors in the chili is cinnamon. Mm-hmm. So it's a very weird kind of.
Whoa.
It's weird, man.
Whoa.
I'm planning on going to see the Braves in Cincinnati at the end of the month if we're not in the College World Series. So I'm waiting on that. And I want to knock that one off the list.
It's a good one. Okay.
Skyline Chili.
Okay.
I didn't like it. Like, I was all jacked up about getting to try it. And then when I was like in Cincinnati.
It looks like a lot.
And my friends took
me
down
there. It looks
like a lot. What really did it for me, it's a cinnamon. I just couldn't deal. It was just odd to me.
People up there love it.
Yeah, they swear about it.
All right, stay with us. We got three more of those for you. First, Marcus Young hits the reset button. For those of you just joining, a busy day in the world of sports, and we'll talk about it when we continue. More Fan Run Radio, hour number three, coming up.